Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 3:03 p.m. that is Central Time. Today is June 6th. I thought we'd kick off with Nvidia. It's down about $6, and it got up to 400, and then a bit of a downward dynamic and a little bit of follow through so far. But I think it's important to look at that longer term chart just to highlight how fast it has gone up. But perhaps more important than that is if we look at the chart of its earnings per share, then they went up to a peak in 2022 and then came down a lot. And the most important thing is that that's a lower high, whereas the price is a higher high. So that's the only way to justify that is with valuation expansion. Now, I thought it was also interesting to simply look at the constituents of the NASDAQ 100 and then rank them by their price to sales ratio. And there you have Nvidia right at the top at 36, almost 37 times. And Pinduoduo is number two, Datadog, Seagen. So then let's just maybe look at some of those by the same metric. So we can then think about Pinduoduo. Now, we may not have the same data because it is an ADR, but we have earnings per share that have at least been trending higher, but have more recently been coming back down. And then the share is certainly well below where prices were in 2022, or 2020 for that matter. So at least it's got a high price to sales ratio, but at least the price is not a high. Now let's then just look at Datadog. So these are companies that I don't think most people are especially familiar with, and Datadog has broken on the upside, but that's after a really quite profound decline from 200 down to 60, from the peak in 2021 down to the lows at only about 6 weeks ago. But even at these levels, it's certainly not the cheapest company in the world. But then let's just look at that earnings per share, and we can see that it has more recently begun to improve, but it is a shade of where it was all the way from 2019 through to 2022. So by thinking that this breakout from the base is going to be sustained, one would have to very much conclude that the trend of earnings growth isn't just going to pick up, but it's going to accelerate and accelerate in a very profound manner. Now, when we look at the NASDAQ 100, well, it is overbought in the short term and it is susceptible to at least some pause and consolidation. And I put those at just the size of the decline relative to the size of the advanced charts are these just measures on the chart about a month ago, just to highlight the similarities that we have today with the initial peak from back in 1999. Now, the pace of the decline from the original peak to the first reaction low in early 2000 was swift, whereas it took almost a year on this occasion. But the magnitude of the size of the decline is about the same. Therefore, on a point and figure chart, it wouldn't show that longer duration. And I think that's also something that's worth paying attention to. Now, the NASDAQ was in positive territory today, and it has been higher now for 6 consecutive weeks. And that is pricing in the massive enthusiasm that's present for the artificial intelligence revolution. But how much of that is promise? How much of it has been priced in? And how much of it is going to be clear reality? Now, I started shorting Apple yesterday, and Apple hasn't really been associated with artificial intelligence, and there was a big run up in the price nonetheless, and it has paused here around the $180 level. It was off the lows in here today. But I do want to go back to this just list of companies, because we can see that there's a good number have price to sales ratios in excess of 10. And also, Microsoft is one of those with a price to sales ratio of 12. So I think it's also important to just look at Microsoft. So if we simply look at the fact that it has accelerated higher, it bounced from the region of the 1,000-day moving average and has really done very little but rise since the release of ChatGPT. It's right in the region of its all-time peak, but the market is pricing in a lot of good news already for earnings. And maybe we should then look at those earnings. And I do apologize, I'm going to have to take a little bit of time to bring that chart up. But the reality here is that even though we've had the price advance, then the bigger question here is, are we going to see earnings continue to trend higher? Are they going to rally straight back up to the peak and break out? So obviously, we've definitely seen that Microsoft has had this profound move upwards in earnings per share, and that has singularly been fueled by the adoption of a subscription business model. They're obviously hoping that they will be able to charge a higher premium for artificial intelligence solutions. They might be right in that, but certainly, the valuation is implying that a lot of that news is already in the price. Now, when we think about what all this means, well, with prices at new highs and earnings per share lagging, then that's valuation expansion. We've had a big move higher in interest rates. So, 500 basis points since January of 2022 is a lot, and there's no expectation that it's in fact over. And that would suggest that we're in the third psychological perception stage, where we have a big story, we have the developing mania, we have very high valuations, and we have central banks that are raising interest rates and preferably taking away the proverbial punch bowl. And lots of investors that are throwing caution to the wind and being quite aggressive in buying into all of these AI-related instruments. Now, the 10-year yield has been quite stable, but it is still holding above the 3.5% level, and we still have inverted yield curves. So it's not usually until the yield curve is trending higher, which would generally coincide with interest rates starting to come back down in response to sharply lower growth, that we see some of the biggest stress in the stock market. Therefore, what I think is the easiest conclusion, therefore, is that this is an accelerating trend environment. This is the time to be most particularly diligent with stops. When there is evidence of the consistency characteristics of an accelerating trend rolling over, then that is the time to start taking money off the table. But most particularly, it's the time to stop buying. And I think that is going to be the best advice anyone could follow over the course of the next 6 months. Now, the dollar index was in mildly positive territory in here today, and there's a lot of questioning about the trajectory of interest rates. So, the EU is likely to continue raising rates. The US government is going to be issuing a lot of debt over the course of the next month, and that is likely to put upward pressure on yields. They're going to siphon money out of the banking sector, creating demand for those same deposits. That should push yields up. Now, the bigger question is, banks are rallying here, and they were certainly in firmer territory in here today. So we have, on the one hand, the potential that the deposits of banks will get siphoned out by the Treasury rebuilding its coffers and the wall of issuance that's on the way. Banks are rallying nonetheless because they're pricing in the potential that eventually the Federal Reserve will be cutting rates and stimulating the economy. But the regional banks index has now broken the sequence of lower rally highs, and it is unwinding the short-term oversold condition. So there is clearly the potential that it is going to rally straight back up and test the region of that 200-day moving average. But then the bigger question is, where is the growth going to come from there? And that's obviously going to be, I think, a challenge in a rising interest rate environment. Now, the RBA in Australia raised rates in here today and said that they might continue to raise rates. So that has been a support for the Australian dollar, and it has rebounded over the last 4 days, and it is now testing the region of the 200-day moving average. There's been a downward bias to trading for the Aussie dollar for over 2 years already. So it has some work to do if it's going to break that downtrend, but I think it is looking more likely with the RBA saying that they are going to continue to raise rates because they want to definitely get the inflation rate back down into their 2 to 3% band. But that is putting some downward pressure on the ASX 200, and it is right now in the region of the 200-day moving average. Now, I think it is important to highlight this, the primary consistency of the longer trend, and it is that there have been several occasions where the ASX has pulled back below the 1,000-day moving average, but of course the 2020 experience being the most extreme. And on every one of those occasions, it has been a favorable buying opportunity. Now, we are not all that far away from the last one of those, and the index is rolling over again. So, in terms of the trend and this volatile range, it looks a lot more similar to the period between 2013 and 2015, except, of course, that prices are quite a bit higher today. So, it would be really ideal if the 7,000 level were to hold and the 2,000, excuse me, the 1,000-day moving average were to hold as well. But I think that is going to be very much impacted by what happens in China. And the Chinese today told banks to lower their deposit rates. Now, that is not the same thing as telling banks that they don't need to hold as much in reserve. It's simply telling them that they don't have to pay depositors as much, so they might, or they've been instructed at least, to lower deposit rates by about 10 basis points. And that is just not going to be enough to move the needle in terms of stimulus. So the CSI 300 was in negative territory as well in here today. And I think what happens in China is a very material going to have a very material impact on what happens with copper. And the price was a tiny bit weaker in here today. It has bounced from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. It's oversold in the short term. So we could see an additional unwinding of that short-term oversold condition and potentially reversion back up to the 200-day moving average. But as long as there is uncertainty around the case for stimulus in China, then I think it's hard to argue that copper is going to rally in a profound manner. Now, there are certainly incentives to think about why demand for copper should rise over the medium term. We have the reasonably high price of oil, and then there is the green movement and all of that money that was set aside for the Green New Deal and or the Inflation Reduction Act, more accurately, and that could all get or that could create additional demand. Well, I think those are certainly in the future. And it would be a lot easier if copper prices were cheaper. And again, that is all going to hinge on what happens more in China than anywhere else. Now, oil prices had been well off the low in early trading, and we're still looking at an environment where it's a very finely balanced market. the price today is pretty much the same as it was back in December. Now we've had a bit of back and forth in between, but that's about the middle of the range. Then the blowing up of the dam in Ukraine. The thing that really popped into my mind this morning was that I'd heard that name before. So I went back and I looked at some of the news headlines, and there was talk from about 4 months ago that Russia was draining the reservoir. And there was a lot of speculation at the time about why they would be doing that. And now it becomes apparent that they've blown up the dam. But by draining it, then the size of the flood has flooded the battlefield, but will probably have contained some of the damage downstream. And since that is ostensibly Russian territory with significant agricultural assets, then they may have been draining the reservoir, both as a signal that they were basically signaling that the dam and hydro station were legitimate targets, also to forfend at the possibility that they would damage their own territory by blowing it up. And then by blowing it up, they've flooded the battlefield and will probably help to stall the Ukrainian advance. I think that one thing that is not being considered is that Russia successfully bogged down the Ukrainian army in Bakhmut and at the same time was able to dig in its defenses all the way along the southern frontier. And now they're going to make it very heavy going for the Ukrainian counteroffensive, and they'll force Ukraine to expend a lot of material and men in an attempt to capture territory. And that is, it is a lot easier to defend against an incoming force with inferior numbers because you can basically perform a guerrilla operation. You cannot take territory with a guerrilla operation. You need weight of numbers and material. So that's obviously one of the limitations of the Ukrainian military. And then it does beg significant questions about the sustainability of the counteroffensive if they lose large numbers of people. And Ukraine is still significantly outnumbered. So then the success of this counteroffensive and how much does Ukraine have riding on it? This is going to be, I think, a very big question for later on in the summer. And is it going to lead to a negotiated settlement where Russia comes out in a much stronger than anticipated position? And that is a potential outcome that could be a catalyst for higher oil prices. And then I think it's also worth just paying attention to wheat prices. And they really have collapsed since the beginning of the war and are now right back in the region of the 600 cent level, which is the upper side of the base formation. We've had some volatility over the last 3 or 4 days and a good sized bounce from that 600 cent level, but it hasn't quite yet broken the sequence of lower rally highs. If the war is going badly for Ukraine, I think it would be reasonable to anticipate that wheat will be one of the commodities that will be most sensitive to any change in, on the where the front exactly lies. So there's plenty of things to pay attention to in the markets right now. And we're certainly in an environment where there are tensions rising. And you have the White House talking about China having or being more aggressive in what they're doing with their ships and their aircraft. The one thing, again, that I think is less discussed is that China has about 20 to 30 million excess males as a result of the preference for boys and the one-child policy. So, what do you do? I think if we just look historically, what historically have societies done with a surfeit of disaffected young men. Well, they've generally gone to war. So it's not beyond the bounds of possibility that a countrywide conscription effort could be the foundation of a future People's Liberation Army recruiting message. And if the rallying cry was to go out and defend Chinese interests abroad and to ensure that every man could find a wife, then that could be certainly something that will feature in a future war. Now, gold prices were a little bit steadier in here today, despite the little bit of strength we saw in the dollar. This continues to pause here in the region of the upper side of the 3-year range. It's unwound a good portion of the overbought condition relative to the 200-day moving average, and it's pausing in the region of the upper side of the underlying range, and I guess more accurately here, at the peak from back in January. As we look at the overvaluation that we have on stock markets, and the expectation that interest rates are going to stay higher for a while longer, the reality is that eventually some of the concerns about why haven't we seen a bigger impact on the market from rising interest rates will be answered. And I think this is probably where the answer will be in the savings rate. So there are lots of expectations for when savings will run out, but excess savings were a major factor in allowing consumers to continue spending to absorb the inflationary pressures. Probably one of the major contributors to inflation have been the excess savings in the first place, and they are being expended. So there's the potential that they'll be running out between October of this year and perhaps October through July, or October 24 through July of 25. And of course, that would be quite a long time. And of course, the excess savings are not going to be evenly distributed around the economy either. So we're certainly in this, I think, rather interesting environment where there are bubbly characteristics emerging in the technology sector. The wider economy is chugging along because of those excess savings. Inflationary pressures are sticky, and everyone is anticipating that when deflationary forces overcome inflationary forces, then interest rates will come down aggressively, and money will be printed in order to solve that problem, which will ignite a further bull market in gold. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.